This is an ABC podcast.
Live from the Realm Library in Ringwood. This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
Have your say at Ringwood Library.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
To The Conversation Hour. Yes, we are broadcasting live from the Realm in Ringwood. It's wonderful to be here. And if you are in the area, pop on in. I'd love to see you. Join the conversation hour. Afternoons will be here as well today as 774 is in Ringwood. I'm loving being here. I'm loving being in a space like this. These spaces, like libraries, we're talking about Ringwood Library, of course. It's in this building. It's also housing so many other people who are coming and doing different things. These are the places where we gather, where we connect, typically called the third space. So I want to talk about that today. These are the third spaces, a place that's not work or home. Increasingly important these days for us to connect. Tell us what the third space is in your life, the most important ones for you. Is it a park? Is it a library? Is it a place where you can take your kids? We're going to be talking about kids today as well. Tell me, 1300 222 774 is the number to call. What do you get from being in a place like this? Is it a place to connect with people and rev up? Is it a place to get away from the tensions of the house, potentially a place to decompress? And meeting people who you might not have otherwise met. Tell us about the people you've met when you've been out and about in those third spaces. Also, talking about meeting people costs generations. Some of the best friendships of my life have been with people who are substantially older or younger than me. I think I was a bit prejudiced when I was young. They all had to be around my age. But I can see nods here from people who say, yeah, actually connecting with people older and younger can be so much more rewarding. We're going to be talking about intergenerational friendships because of a great project that's here in Ringwood that connects young, very young, and older folk. So I'm wanting to ask you, do you have a mate from another generation? How did you meet them? What does their friendship mean to you? What did you get from them, another generation, that you just don't from your peers, your lovely, wonderful friends of your own age? Let me know. Well, maybe you made that intergenerational friendship in a third space. So we will talk about both of those things. But coming up on the Conversation Hour next, the challenges in 2026 of being a young single mum.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
Have your say at Ringwood Library. You're with Mary Guerin.
Is it harder or easier, do you think, these days to be a young single mum? However you want to interpret that, harder or easier, and once upon a time, tell me the pros and the cons back in the day of being a young single mum. What was it like then? What is your experience like? Did you go through this? Is your daughter, your granddaughter potentially going through this? I'd love to hear your stories. Because joining me now, I'm very happy to say, across the table from me here at The Realm, is someone who has done this, who's been a young single mum and has had wonderful support from the other person who's sitting at the table with me. We're talking about a Babes project. That is something that's operating here in Ringwood, and we'll find out about the the parameters of that and how people can get in touch as well. But Caitlin is a former participant and she joins me now. I think you just had a look there too, yeah. Helen. You're still a participant in this. This is still a part of your life, Caitlin.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me about your experience of being a young single mum. How old were you when you found yourself suddenly separated, and what were your responsibilities? How many kids did you have?
Sure. So I was 22 at the time, and I was pregnant with my second daughter. Had recently gone through a separation quite early in my pregnancy, so I think I was just trying to navigate how to get up every morning for my then two-year-old while also being pregnant. And just with really little support around me, I think that came with its own challenges.
So little support.
Yeah.
You didn't get that from family and friends, which is the sort of thing that most people would try to turn to that they'd be able to turn to.
Yeah, exactly. No, family support, I had a little, but definitely not enough that you would need in pregnancy and with another child. Friends-wise, I did have a couple, but they didn't have kids at the time, so I think it's really hard when you're friends with someone that doesn't have kids, but they absolutely try their hardest to be there for you. But I think we tend to isolate ourselves a little bit when we feel like we're not understood as well as others.
So how did that feel? What did it feel like getting up every day like that?
Yeah, definitely a struggle. I think my first daughter kept me going 100%. It was, I need to get up for her. I need to get up to build this life that I now, like, have to do.
Build this life. That, yeah. It sounds like it was a real identity thing as much as a logistical thing.
Definitely. I was very career-driven. And I think that, again, going through a separation so early, I had to put my career on hold. I also was pregnant with my second and, you know, caring for my first. So I still wanted to make a life for myself, but I lacked the support I really needed in doing that.
You're listening to Caitlin. We're in the realm in Ringwood, 1300 222 774. Also, if you've got a story about being a young single mum and the sort of supports that are most needed, then Caitlin, how did you come upon the Babes Project and what did it mean to you?
Sure. So I sort of discovered the Babes Project through my midwife at Box Hill. A little shout out to Effie. She's amazing.
Good on you, Effie.
I came to her in a really trying time. It was very like a dark moment in my life and I had no support. I was like, I don't know what to do. And she's like, have you heard of the Babes Project? And I was like, I haven't. And she's like, I'm going to refer you and they're going to be really good for you. And then they got in touch super quick. I was like, I'm pretty sure it was about a week, I was in their little babes office at the time. And I felt like I had walked in and a whole new world had been opened up to me. I felt more supported than I had ever felt in my pregnancy and I felt really welcomed. It was a nice, refreshing space, that's for sure.
And the welcoming face that's also at the table here is Helen Parker, who is behind the founder, who's the founder, should I say, of the Babes Project. This is obviously a fantastic story that Caitlin's bringing. When did the Babes Project start?
Oh, the Babes Project started officially in 2009. We really worked hard to understand what was going on in our state for women, and that had sort of come from a decade earlier when I'd had my own experience and had a baby young. And so by 2009, we knew that there was still some really huge gaps in our health system. We have a wonderful health system, but there are some pretty significant support gaps for women. So 2009, we incorporated. I just gathered some women around me. We wrote a constitution and off we went. And then our first centre opened in 2012 here in Maroondah.
So tell me about those gaps. Tell me about the details, the real nitty-gritty of what you were able to do for these young women.
Sure. So I had my daughter at 20 and I was a single mum and was at Box Hill as well birthing my daughter and started having some conversations with midwives around the presence of what I like to call band-aid support. So we're really good as a society at chucking a band-aid on something, saying, here you go, here's some nappies, maybe a second-hand car seat. Those things are really important. But when women have their babies, especially when they're alone or facing really significant circumstances, they might be a history of addiction, mental health challenges, they might be in out-of-home care, domestic violence, refugees, and they find themselves having children and then being thrown into a system that is really challenging to navigate, we need to look at something more holistic. And that's what the Babes Project works to do. We work to walk alongside women like Caitlin, and she is a really good example of so many women who actually do have the courage to reach out and say, I am struggling, I need support. And what we need to do as a society is be here to respond. And it's really important that when women ask for that support, we step up. And so Babes works to educate women about what's happening to them in pregnancy, how to birth their babies.
Yeah. Because they may not have the support to even get that.
Right. And hospitals now don't provide as much of that educational piece, especially for women in different circumstances, and then we do postnatal education and parenting education as well.
1300 222 774. If you've got a story about being a young single mum, what was it like potentially at another point in time years ago? Is it easier or harder these days? Caitlin, listening to Helen there, I mean, there's obviously a lot that goes in. Is there one thing in particular that you really just loved about the project that really propelled you forward?
Yeah, I think it was definitely the education support. Helen was right, especially in the hospitals. There's sort of less support they give you towards birthing your baby and sort of even after. And I felt like that was a big thing. And it was just connecting with the women and mums around me as well in the Babes Project was a big thing.
So can I ask about that? It's less support because of... It wouldn't be because a woman is single, surely. It would be because you just don't have the internal resources to sort of keep up with that. You're not a team of two or more.
Sure, and we're not. We don't only work with single women. We work with women who, any women who identify that they have some challenges that are that is exacerbated in pregnancy and early parenting. So
it's really for anyone who's under stress in those times.
Yeah.
Helen, I'm asking people whether it's easier or harder these days. Of course, there are pros and cons to back in the day. You can have some rose-coloured glasses, but we all know it wasn't that great. What do you think of that question? Do you think it's... How optimistic should we be, you as a founder of a project like this? Are we getting more support? Is it the right type of support? What else would you like to see?
I think we're... getting better at talking about the need for community. I think many years ago, community was more natural. You know, we were in community with people through our schools and our workplaces or our churches and different community groups. That's happening less and less as we sort of silo ourselves. But I think there's more conversation around why that's so important. And especially when women's lives change quickly as they have children, it's really important that we educate them about how they can access that support, because we know that the best thing that we can do is be in community with people. And then our children are in community with people, and that's just a healthier place to be.
The village, indeed. So, Caitlin, now bringing it up to the present day, you've got... two fantastic kids. How are they going?
Yeah, really good. Yeah. My youngest, well, the Babes baby, will be 4 next week. And
fantastic.
Time has absolutely flown. And then my eldest will be 7 in October. So in school, well and truly in school.
And so you're part of the project still to help others?
I am, yeah, definitely. I've had amazing opportunities, thanks to Helen as well, that's still ongoing with the Babes. So I love supporting them in any way I can.
Caitlin, it's been absolutely fantastic to meet you. And Helen, thank you so much for coming along. That's Caitlin and Helen Parker. That's the Babes Project. This is the Conversation Hour. We are live from the Realm in Ringwood, which, as I said, is what is known as a third space in architecture land. We're asking, where do you go? What is the most important third space for you? That's somewhere that's not work, that's not your home. Rebecca, you've called in. Tell me, what's the space in your life in this way that's the most important to you?
A local gym that sadly just closed down on us.
Oh, no. Tell me about that. How long had you been going there, Rebecca?
5 years. I came back after giving birth to my third daughter, so very fresh on the back of, I guess, postpartum and recovery and et cetera. And was just welcomed into this amazing community, diverse community, very, very supportive. Wrap your arms around you. You can turn up in any mood or, I guess, any energy level, and you would just be embraced, both physically, mentally, emotionally.
That sounds fantastic. It sounds like you needed it, Rebecca.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
so what's happened to the gym?
We were given one day's notice about a fortnight ago. We were told by the wonderful trainers, and my understanding is they were only given one day's notice as well of their employment ceasing or coming to an end.
Do you know why?
The owner lives interstate, and it's a franchise, Fitstop Preston. And the lease on the building, I understand, was coming to an end as well.
What are you going to do now, yeah. Rebecca? What's the thoughts?
Well, the beautiful community continues. We've got 70-plus members all in a WhatsApp chat. We're all doing free trials around the northern suburbs area, trialing out different studios, but we all seem to say the same feedback, that it's just not the same community, where that same one-to-one physical support, you know, the trainers knowing you by name, the trainers welcoming your children. There was a space at the back where parents could take their children or potentially could train at the side with their children. It was just an amazing community.
Rebecca, I'm sorry to hear that. I too have a wonderful gym. I just love turning up and just feeling that support, even if it's non-verbal. I do hope that all goes well for you and you can create that community somehow, somewhere else. Thank you.
Fingers crossed. We're actually hoping someone might even look to buy into it. So
there you go, an opportunity in Preston for anyone who wants to open a gym. Rebecca and her mates will be there. Thank you, Rebecca. Tell me also about the third space in your life. Is it a gym? 1300 222 774. We'll talk about how you actually design to create that for people. Also, we have in the audience Jenny. Hello, how are you?
Hi, Mary from 30774 Melbourne.
30. Are we dating ourselves here?
Just a tad.
What do you do? Do you come from Ringwood, Jenny?
No, I come from Fitzroy.
Oh, right. Fitzroy. So you've come all this way?
Yep.
Thank you so much. On the train. Well, actually, stick around. I didn't tell you this, but we've got a quiz going during the conversation. Now, I'm very excited because I don't generally get to do quizzes. That's generally, you know, breakfast.
Is Chris helping you?
Chris?
Bridget? No.
No, they're not here to help. So this is a new one for me and I'm just going to try it out. But you coming on the train line, just saying, you've got a head start in this quiz. That's just a little clue. Thank you so much for joining me. And also, join in with the quiz. Everyone who's here, you'll get a head start by being in the audience. But also, if you want to hop on and get your chance to win a beanie, 1300 222 774 is the number to call. Jenny, before I let you go, do you have a third space?
Yeah, like Rebecca and like you, my third space is the gym.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't come yesterday to RAF. Had to go to Pilates.
Excellent. And as I said, it's almost the non-verbal. It's this wonderful community, a bit like a dog park. You can talk if you want.
Yeah, people say, do you know blah, blah, blah? It's like, I don't know. And then I see their face, I go, oh, yeah, I know them.
Or in the local supermarket. Yeah, that's right. And what would you do if you're like Rebecca and it's suddenly closed with one day's notice?
Well, my gym is the City Baths, which has been going since 1860. If that closed, it would be...
Oh, I think you'd have a few friends who'd be protesting about that, Jenny. That's a good one to go to. Tell me, is it a gym for you? 1300 222 774. What are the third spaces? Coming up next on the Conversation Hour, we're going to be talking about another fantastic inspirational project here that draws on friendships between generations. Ring and tell me if you've got a fantastic friendship with either someone very much older, very much younger than you. That's coming up next.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
Have your say at Ringwood Library. You're with Mary Guerin.
Yes, I'm at Ringwood Library and I am talking to Monique Waterhouse, who is behind Big Little Buddies here in Ringwood and the local area.
Yeah, across Maroondah and Yarra Ranges councils.
We're talking about intergenerational friendships and what you can get from them. Can you get from someone much older, much younger than you, a friendship in your life that's been outside your peer group? Tell us about Little Buddies and how that works.
Sure. So we're a small registered charity and we aim to reduce isolation and loneliness for aged care residents and bring generations together. And we do that by running music programs for preschoolers in aged care settings.
A little bit like that ABC series, wasn't it?
Very like that.
And so when did it start and when did you know it was working?
Yeah, so I have a background in primary education and we were lucky enough that there was an aged care right next to the school I worked at. So I used to take kids down there pretty much from the first time we set foot in there. I noticed there was something special going on, just having those two groups together and watching the reactions on both ends, the residents lighting up as the kids arrived, but also having kids chase me down in the playground asking, is it my turn to go next week? And yeah, I guess I saw that and thought this is something special and simple, and surely we could do more of this.
Absolutely. I've seen the video that promotes it and it's just spine tingling. 1300 222 774, tell us about the intergenerational friendship in your life. Is the generational divide really as big as everyone says? I'd love to know, and tell me how you met that person in your life. With the little buddies, you talk about the kids you brought. How old are they?
Preschool age, so the majority will be like the sort of 2 to 5 year age, but then little siblings obviously get tagged along, so we get the babies, which is actually really special because you don't tend to find babies in those spaces, and you see the residents, yeah, really respond to seeing little newborns as well.
And the residents obviously are among our older people, but, you know, it can be in their 80s, 90s.
Yeah, yeah. And beyond. I've met a few 100 plus as well.
Fantastic. Yeah. Tell me about some of the interactions that you've seen that make you know this is it, this is working.
Yeah, sure. I guess it's in the small but really special moments. So things like it's often family members, I guess, relaying their experiences, telling us or staff, like, about a resident who this is the only time they come out of their room in a week, or those who are lining up at 9 o'clock to get the best seat, even though the program starts at 10:30.
What's the best seat, like the most access to the kids?
I guess so, yeah, the entrance, so they can, like, try and get a little high five on the way in. And then on the flip side, there's the kids who maybe have... don't have older people in their lives. Maybe their grandparents live overseas, or those who are just, you know, a little bit more shy and reserved around older people, having that aging process normalised for them and realising that aging isn't something at all to fear.
You're listening to The Conversation Hour. We're talking about intergenerational friendships, and with me is Monique Waterhouse, and the program is Big Little Buddies. You talked about the benefits to the kids because they don't have, for instance, the grandparents. What have the parents said to you about what it means to those kids, what it adds to their lives?
Yeah, that's the best thing about it, is how truly mutually reciprocal it is and beneficial, I guess. So the kids are working on their social skills, they're developing confidence, and they're developing empathy as well, interacting with the older people, and developing like pro-social skills, like that sharing, or learning to engage someone, noticing if someone has a need that they might be able to meet.
Yeah, and obviously you're talking about the rejuvenating aspect for the older residents there. You know, what have the families of those people told you about just how extraordinary those interactions can be?
Yeah, sure. So, like I said, it's primarily about reducing isolation and loneliness, but it's also about providing a sense of purpose in this life stage, and helping society see that there still is so much to give, and so much that those people can offer, making connections across generations, and really improving all facets of health. So emotional, physical, even getting them moving. There's nothing like a child handing you an instrument to encourage you to get involved. You can't really say no.
You really can't.
That's it, and it works really well.
And so any plans to expand this?
Would love to. As a charity, often the barriers is often funding, but yeah, plenty of interest, and yeah, that's absolutely the hope.
Monique, thank you for joining us today and telling us about it, and good luck with everything.
Pleasure, thank you.
That's Monique Waterhouse from Big Little Buddies. We are talking about intergenerational connections there, and I believe we've got someone on the line who has an intergenerational friendship. Who have we got there? Is that John?
Yes, it is.
Hello, John. Tell me about your intergenerational friendship.
Well, it started in my 30s with an older male, about 20 years older, and I found it more of a mentoring relationship where I was at ease and there was a complete lack of competitiveness there where I could discuss all sorts of issues about life and life matters, finances, etc. And I found it invaluable, actually. And it's something that I hold dear to this day.
And you've made friendships there across generations?
I'm actually more comfortable with older, more successful people, quite frankly.
There you go. John, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us that story. Doris in Berwick, you've got intergenerational friendships in your life?
Yes, I do. Hi, Mary. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
I'm a barista, so I'm in my late 50s. So I'm kind of working with people who are in their teens and 20s, and I love... They're all hysterical and funny and wonderful and really smart, and they embrace me as their sort of their work mum. But it's also keeping me really in touch with my my own kids' generation, because my kids are their age. So it's just a really fulfilling relationship for me, and I think for them as well. We all get along really, really well.
That's so interesting. And there's also just that aspect of working with people, whether they're younger or older, that allows you to talk in a different way than with your kids, doesn't it?
It does, exactly. And I learned the lingo that my kids are sort of rolling their eyes at me, maybe, hopefully not anymore, because it's not teens anymore, but they are really all, like when it comes to the lingo, and I'm like, I don't know how to use that. And they're like, oh, you use it, I don't. And then they explain it to me. And also the other thing, you were talking before about your other place that makes you feel good. And for me, it's work for that reason, because I love the people I work with and I'm really comfortable with.
Oh, that's the ideal. And when work is so so rejuvenating as well. And for other people, it's the cafe you work in that's that great third space. Thank you, Doris. Yes, I also do that thing where I go and ask someone I work with much younger, what does that mean? I take it home and I embarrass my kids with it. In the audience, I believe we've got Kathy. You're part of a knitting group, is that right, Kathy?
That's right, yes. We've been meeting for about 15 years now. We usually meet here at Realm.
Have you got a wide range of ages?
We do, all ages. Anyone's welcome, but there's about 8 of us that meet on a regular basis, and I think we move heaven and earth to make it on a Wednesday.
Oh, that's fantastic. So this is your third space here in the Realm? Here in the Realm?
Yes, right here. We just meet and we all do our own projects. It can be knitting, crocheting, a bit of patchwork.
Interesting you use those words, you move heaven and earth to do it. Do you find that that's the thing that gets you out of bed potentially on a Wednesday sometimes?
Exactly. You don't miss it for anything. So it's our therapy group too. We've all been through our ups and downs with each other.
Oh, that's true.
And some of us have had some pretty hard times, but you can always come here and the girls support you. So it's a lovely place to come.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Makes me inspired to even get my bad knitting out and join you. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
I'd love to hear from you as well, 1300 222 774, if you've got one of those clubs. If you've got some intergenerational friendships as well, we'll keep that conversation going in the conversation hour. But also, hop on the line, 1300 222 774, if you want to win a beanie. I don't ever get to give away beanie, so I'm very excited. It's going to be about general knowledge about Ringwood, because I'm going to be joined soon by someone who knows all about Ringwood's history. We'll talk about that. Your chance to win a beanie coming up soon.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
Have your say at Ringwood Library. You're with Mary Guerin.
Here I am at Ringwood Library. Yes, and 774 has been here already with Raf. You're going to have Bridget this afternoon and Charlie tomorrow. We're absolutely delighted to be here in Ringwood. And to give us a bit of a background, to give us the heart and soul, like a description that's going to get people running to Ringwood, we have Russ Haynes, who's an author and president of the Ringwood District Historical Society, to sum up what is the joy of Ringwood. Thanks for joining us, Russ.
The joy of Ringwood. Oh, it sounds fabulous, doesn't it?
You've written it up. You did a piece in The Age.
Yeah, I did the Life and the Blurbs.
That's right.
It was published yesterday. So initially my version was very dry, very historical. And I thought, no, this is not going to work. So we've had four generations of my family in Ringwood, and I thought, you know, what are we? And we're talking about intergenerational connection. So, you know, my son is about a kilometre away with grandchildren. My wife's mother was only a kilometre away. So there is an intergenerational connection to all that. And selling Ringwood, well, you know, it's been developed quite hardly, harshly, I suppose, some people might say.
We will get to your observations as well, and I'm also interested in how you called it a rock and roll place to be. I'm talking to everyone in the audience here and everyone at home. Also, your chance to win a beanie. I have four beanies, so that's why there are four questions. Not three, not five, four, because that's how many beanies we have. I will prioritise the people in the audience, but if you want to hop on the line and just be ready to answer these questions, 1300 222 774. Now, you can't just yell out the answer. Julie is here. You just put your hand up. She will run over to you with that mic. So let's get started, Russ. I'm going to read them out. You very kindly helped us out with this. You will be our... If we need more clues... You can actually, you'll be the one to supply them.
Of course.
Okay. In what year did Eastland open? In what year did Eastland open? Do we have a hand up? We can see it from here, can't we, Russ?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're in the fifth stage of Eastland at the moment, so.
Anyone who wants to have a guess?
It was my youth.
It was your youth? Okay, let's have a go.
I guess it would be about 1967.
Yes, you get the beanie.
Yo.
Oh, that's a good guess. Well done.
Nice one.
Okay, there we go, Russ. Okay, this is the second one. Which two train lines will take you to Ringwood? Oh, now Jenny has put her hand up straight up there. I guess because you took it from Fitzroy, Jenny.
From Flinders Street. It's the Belgrave or the Lilydale lines.
A beanie for Jenny.
Well done.
It's those train lines as well that connect everyone to Ringwood. You were talking about the development of it. You also, as I said, you described it as a rock and roll area because we've got some alumni. Tell us who are the famous Ringwood artists.
Oh, well, in fact, our town hall was next to this building, just a little west there. So if you walk out the front, that was our town hall. And eventually it got the name of Piccadilly, if anyone remembers the old Piccadilly dance club there. Mm. And I used to rock along and listen to Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs and Johnny Farnham in those days. It wasn't John Farnham. And lots of acts came and did the circuits. They went here and then they went somewhere else on a Saturday night. They might have done three or four gigs in the one night, but...
You have a couple of Skyhooks here as well?
Skyhooks. Two of our Skyhooks went to school not far away at Norwood High.
There you go.
And got together.
Homebred.
And they're still popular, I think. So it's been a wonderful area for music. We've got people who recently have joined Little Feet and other bands. So music's always been very popular in Ringwood.
Mm. Russ has thrown in one that I didn't know, but maybe all the locals do know about this. It's a tough one, I've got to say, Russ. What metal did they mine in Ringwood in the 1870s? I'm not suggesting anyone here is old enough to remember it firsthand, but what metal did they mine in Ringwood in the 1870s? Someone has shot their hands up. Julie's on her way. We've got a... Okay, let's go to this gentleman.
I'd like to say antimony, was it?
Antimony.
Oh, my goodness.
Beautiful and well pronounced, too.
That's fabulous. What is antimony, Russ?
Antimony is a little soft grey metal that was used for lubricants and face paint and various other things, but that's all gone out now. But not far from us is Ringwood Lake. And behind there, there's a wonderful display of the mining of antimony.
So is that right?
Get up there after the show.
Okay, there we go. And I'll ask you in a moment what other things we should come to see. But for the fourth and last beanie, what NAIDOC exhibition is currently on at the Realm? as I see people turn around behind them, it is right behind the audience here. So if you can't get it, actually, we've got someone who's already popped their hands up in the air. What is the NAIDOC exhibition currently on at the Realm?
It's the 50th anniversary of the posters, and they're all displayed in the room over there.
That's completely correct. Yes, the Deadly Posters 50. It goes until Sunday, I believe, and it looks really fantastic. I'm going to have a look. Russ, thank you so much. To finish on then, apart from this exhibition, what are the things that should draw people to Ringwood? And of course, the mining.
Well, from here, in fact, we've got the Heritage Railway Station across the road and the signal box, as you can see. Not far behind that car park over there is a 111-year-old corner store. So we've preserved that corner store recently, and it was incredible. They actually lifted it up and moved it 30 metres. So that's the another first in Australia that's been done.
How did they do that?
Well, they put hydraulic lifts under it and just turned it, and it took them a few days just to move 30 metres and lowered the whole brick building down again. That's amazing, isn't it?
Did you watch it?
I did, and I got the time-lapse photography there, and that goes a bit quicker than just watching it, I think. But we got the Ringwood Lake, as I mentioned. There's a fire station, 1930s there, and a few other things if you can walk around. There's always plenty to see.
I'm always fascinated with people who join the historical societies. I imagine it comes from a deep love of place. You mentioned the four generations. What's it like? How is it satisfying looking into this and bringing it to life?
Well, it is. You know, it's a personal interest. I suppose people have got memories and nostalgic things. But actually, we're preserving a lot of stuff from 1924. So a lot of our stuff is over 100 years old. There's like 60,000 entries. And people are using that now to talk about social inclusion. How was it years ago? They had a lot of dances years ago, just community efforts, talking over the backyard. Just looking back, you can actually see what people did and what our parents did long ago.
We're talking about third spaces. Is the Historical Society one of those as well for you?
We love people. I go and talk to children at school about history, and I'll be giving a talk in October over the lake. And we try to involve other communities. So we go and talk to Probus or other areas. I wrote a book about artists, so we involve the artist group here, which is very strong. So we try to include everything. We're a community organisation.
Mm. Do you get young people involved?
We do, and I was going to mention that. We're not just an old, fuddy-duddy, rusty sort of stuff. We've got about over 10,000 people on our Facebook.
Right.
And young people said, I want to join because I want to know about Ringwood, you know, and my house that I bought recently, and I'm renovating, or things like that. So there's a lot of young people interested in history, and they want to use it for their own benefit.
I've always wondered about that, and if you're in a historical society, give us a call, 1300 222 774. It generally is about the houses. Is it hard to get that information, or are councils making it easier?
You can research your own titles and various other things, but come and see us, and we've got articles about who lived there and all the other goss that you might want to know.
Russ Haynes, thank you so much for being here today and facilitating the beanie distribution. Lovely to meet you.
Congratulations.
That's Russ Haynes, who is author and president of the Ringwood District Historical Society. Yes, as I say, if you're from an historical society, tell me what you get out of that. Is it the space that you're meeting people with a shared passion? These are sometimes called third spaces. We're talking about it today. We're broadcasting from one of those places today in the Realm. What is the third space in your life, the place outside of work and home that gives you such joy? That's coming up next.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
Have your say at Ringwood Library. You're with Mary Guerin.
1300 222 774, if you would like to join the conversation, any of the conversations we've been having today, but particularly third spaces, the places that give you joy outside your work and home. And I believe a lady in the audience, you've got a third space you want to talk about?
I guess it's Realm. We come every week to read the papers and just hang out for a bit.
So that's the library you go to first?
Yeah, Dad and I go up to the library, read the papers, and then come down for a coffee.
Oh, hi, Dad. I can see you. Yep. Hi, how are you going?
Hello.
Do you like the space too?
Do you like the space too?
Oh, yes, very much so. It's got very friendly people down here, and I'm able to read newspapers and things like that.
I know. They're disappearing, aren't they, the newspapers? It's good to be able to read them anywhere, let alone in a nice space.
I listen to 774 too.
Excellent. Oh, we love to hear that. And are there other spaces within here that you do go to? Is it...
Yeah, so we use the cafe.
Yep.
And we've been up to the top floor. Don't spend too much up there. Mm. But, yeah, mostly the library.
And what I've noticed sitting here, such beautiful natural light as well. Mm. Is it that sort of space? It gets you out of a home.
Yeah.
Just somewhere different.
Yeah, it's the design of the place, the light. Mm. On a sunny day, it's nice. On a cloudy day, it's also nice. So, yeah, it's a good place to come.
Thank you. What were your names?
I'm Joe.
Ross.
Joe and Ross, thank you so much for your stories. Talking about third spaces, David Bissell is Professor of Human Geography at Melbourne Uni and was listening to that as well. Hi, David. These are important spaces for people, aren't they? And the design, as we've just heard, with light and so forth, means such a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. No, great to be part of this conversation, Mary. I think, as you know, as you've been saying, so many of us imagine that the main space in our lives are the space of home and work. But actually, there's a massive spectrum of places that are not home and work, but that we actually spend a lot of our day-to-day life in. And of course, it's places like realms, so libraries, as Joe and Ross have just been saying, but it's also could be cafes, bars, parks, trains, buses. It's a potentially limitless list of different spaces, absolutely.
Did we have to come up with a phrase, if you like, in order for it to be inserted into urban planning policy? You know, this idea of this third space, was there a sense that they were being neglected and that's why we're talking about it?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's interesting that we're talking about third spaces at this particular moment. And I think that certainly in the research that we've been doing at the University of Melbourne is trying to identify how third spaces and a range of third spaces have become more significant to people. And so, for example, the massive rise in working from home, especially in our cities in Melbourne, has meant that people actually don't want to work necessarily at a desk in their homes because, you know, we've all felt that sense of cabin fever, but they're actually exploring their neighbourhoods, their cafes and certainly library spaces because they want to feel that sense of being connected to a wider community, that sense of being part of a neighbourhood that maybe you don't get if you're just so preoccupied with maybe your home and workspace. So, yeah, I think they're very important spaces and becoming even more important.
You're listening to David Bissell, who is with the Melbourne Uni, and we're talking about third spaces. 1300 222 774. If you've got a favourite third space, cafes, parks, what's the most important element of them? David, a couple of things that I heard when you're talking there is that people go there for different reasons. So it's a really important design feature, isn't it, that you could go to one of these places, be social if you like, but also be by yourself and decompress and get out of that home space, as you say, at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're actually pretty restricted in our home and work spaces very often. At work, we've got set tasks to do, and at home, very often, we're having to do a whole bunch of things related to our families. But these third spaces are very often the spaces where we have really important me time, where we listen to podcasts, where we daydream, where we have kind of light touch social interaction with folks. And I think it's important to kind of appreciate how spaces, third spaces that we may think are super functional, like, for example, a supermarket, we go there to shop, but actually that fulfills a lot of very, very different rationales. I always think of my mother here. She's in her mid-70s. She goes to the supermarket every day, but it's certainly not because she needs to go and buy stuff every day. It's about having that kind of sense of feeling part of a wider community. And she loves it. She would really miss it if she didn't do it.
Yeah, yeah. My mum was the same. Tim, you've called in from Ringwood. Do you have a favourite third space?
Yeah, it'd have to be the Mullum Creek. It's good back in the day, pushing the pram around, just getting out in the sun and well, these days it's just going for a jog or commuting and walking to work, and you run into a lot of the same faces and people, and it's just, yeah, a good 20, 30 minutes walking around the creek there. Just runs straight through Ringwood.
That's a great suggestion, Tim. I didn't really think of a creek as a space, but you're exactly right. And as you're saying, you sort of adapt it to various parts of your life.
Yeah, it's just evolved over time, and it's a really nice green space to be in. Mm. It seems safe. You got one side with the walking track and the other side with the shared bike path.
Sounds fantastic. Thank you, Tim. Mullum Creek is that suggestion. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. And David, I guess when we're talking about all of this as well, we're talking about maintaining them, like, you know, Tim was talking about, it needs to be maintained. How vulnerable are these spaces to funding cuts and so forth, the vagaries of politics, because they aren't defined, I guess, so well within our structure?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there are a specific type of third space that is quite regularly under threat with budget cuts. So if we think here particularly about our public spaces like public libraries and other community spaces like neighbourhood houses, that matter a lot to the community, but actually when councils and governments are looking line by line of things to cut, it's very often an easy target. And I guess what's overlooked there are the kind of massive significance that those spaces actually have to communities that maybe can't be put in dollar terms. So, you know, these public third spaces especially really, really need championing, because they're places that we should be advocating for.
David, thank you so much for your time. Are you off to your third space now?
I might have a little walk down the Merri Creek next. I think I've just been inspired by Tim, yes.
I know, I was thinking of Merri Creek as well. David Bissell, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mary.
David Bissell is Professor of Human Geography at Melbourne Uni. We have been talking about third spaces with him, and I am broadcasting from the Realm, about to wrap up the conversation hour. But in the audience, we have David, who is part of the Eastern Emergency Relief Network. Hello, David. I met you before. Lovely to meet you.
It's good to be here, actually, Mary. That's great. And it's great to see all the people who have come to listen to the program.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Tell me about the network.
Right. Okay. Well, I've come on behalf of the Eastern Emergency Relief Network. Mm-hmm. And we've been operating for 30 years. And our main job is to, we go out each day, Monday to Friday, to collect people who are downsizing their furniture. Comes back to our two warehouses in Mitcham. And we have over 100 member agencies and charities who bring their clients and can choose whatever they need on the list that's been provided to go and fill the space in their homes.
Oh, that's fantastic. How much do you have? Like, how big is your storage for this?
We'll give you an example. I think last year we had about 100, had a number of 1,067 pickups and donor drop-offs. We had tonnage diverted from landfill at 150 tonne and tonnage collected 165.
Oh, yeah, so, that is fantastic. Yes,
thank you.
Deserve some applause and must warm the heart of every recycler who's listening. How can people support it, David?
Well, basically it's a matter of just contacting us, and then we say, where do you live? And we'll come out and collect the goods. Normally we ask for a photograph. We collect good quality furniture and household goods. Mm. And so what we do is that we go out and organise a time to pick it up for nothing. There's no charges. And that goes out and then comes back to our warehouse. And, for example, if it's refrigerators or white goods, we have a warehouse dedicated to making sure everything is perfectly safe and working. We spend about 7 days working on every refrigerator.
Wow.
To make sure that when it does go out, our clients are absolutely satisfied. And I might just add that there is absolutely no clarification as to who may use our facility. Okay? Of our member agencies, they have their caseworkers, and maybe domestic violence, it might be immigrants, it might be refugees.
All these
or
needs.
People who are coming out of incarceration. We never ask a question. And we're all volunteers, and we believe that if a client comes in and at the end they say, wow, we didn't believe this could happen.
Oh, David, thank you so much for giving us that information. That's David from the Eastern Emergency Relief Network. Before we get to Bridget Duclos, who is also broadcasting here and sitting next to me now, I asked for anyone who's part of an historical society to tell me what they get out of it. Greg, you're president of the Stawell Historical Society. What's the best thing, Greg, about bringing history to life?
Hi, Mary. Yeah, no, I'm the secretary treasurer of the Stawell Historical Society, and we have got about 110 members and 17 active members who are here 1, 2, or 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. And we do all just get a tremendous amount of satisfaction out of volunteering to inform people on the history of Stawell and district. And we are continually getting inquiries from people whose relatives died here many years ago and wanting to know where they're buried and details of where they lived, and it just gives us all a great amount of satisfaction.
Greg, thank you. And like Russ from the Ringwood Historical Society there, that sense of connection, we've been talking about it all morning. I can hear that it's happening there at Stawell. Thank you. It has been a wonderful morning here. I can see people as we've been sitting here, Bridge, lots of people wandering in and out and just really enjoying the
day. It's just got a lovely community vibe, hasn't it, Mary?
Really
it's gorgeous.
And yep, the beautiful natural light as well. Absolute delight to be here. Chris from Ringwood North has texted in. We've been talking about the nature of Ringwood. What will draw people out on those two railway lines, as I'm looking at Jenny? There, Ringwood was seen as a bit down market once upon a time, says Chris. Not now. Lived here 15 years. It's great. One, green and leafy. Two, great architectural redevelopment of Eastland. Three, excellent integration of the station to the plaza area. Gateway to the Yarra Valley. Good highway access to Peninsula. Well, we're almost all going to move here. Thank you so much for being part of the audience in person and on the radio for the Conversation Hour today. I will be back again. And if you want to listen to any of this again, it's on the ABC Listen app or write to me, conversationhour@abc.net.au. Talk to you again tomorrow.